शुकराय कृष्णा प्रस्ताय कुटले श्रीमती भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी नामिनी नमस्ते सरस्वती देवे गौरवाणी पिछाणी निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पश्चाच तेजतारिणी. So we're going to read the translation. Okay, it's actually on the next page, sorry. He who brought the treasure of divine love and was filled with compassion and mercy wears such a personality as Srinivasacharya Gaur. Where my Swarup Damodar and Rupa Goswami? Where is Sanatan? Where is Raghunath Das, the savior of the fallen? Where are my Raghunath Bhatta and Gopal Bhatta, and where is Krishnas Kaviraj? Where did Lord Gauranga, the great dancer, suddenly go? I will smash my head against the rock and enter into fire. Where will I find Lord Gauranga, the reservoir of all wonderful qualities? Being unable to obtain the association of Lord Gauranga, accompanied by all of these devotees, whose association he performed his pastimes, Narottama Das simply weeps. So Srila Prabhupada instructed us that on the disappearance days of great personalities, we should chant this prayer. So Om Gana Timurandasha Gananjana Shilakya Chakshur Un Minitam Yena Tasmai Shigurve Namaha. So Narottama Das Thakur himself wrote this prayer when he heard about the disappearance of Srinivasacharya and also Ramchandra Chakravarti, who was his very intimate friend. So he wrote this prayer, and then he decided to leave this world feeling separation from these two personalities. And the story goes that Narottama Das Thakur sat on a funeral pyre. You know, he was still alive. I mean, devotee's always alive. Devotee never dies. He sat on a funeral pyre and sat in meditation. And then some rascals started to criticize Narottama Das Thakur, saying that this is a very inauspicious way of leaving this world, and this proves that he actually was acting inappropriately because he was born in what was considered to be a Shudra family and he was initiating Brahmanas. So this is his offense. And so the disciples of Narottama Das Thakur, like Gangit Narayan Chakravarti, they became very upset to hear the criticism of their guru, and they prayed to their guru not to leave in this particular way. Narottama Das Thakur stood up, manifested a golden Brahmin thread on his body. Amazing story. Walked down, but shortly thereafter, he entered into the Ganges River, and they had the devotees do an abhishek of him, and his body dissolved into, this is how he left this world, his body dissolved into the river, and the devotees saved, it was a milky substance, which his body became that milky substance in the water, and the devotees saved that. It's called the Dugdha Samadhi, and that's still there today. Milk Samadhi, Narottama Das Thakur. So, of course, today is the disappearance day of Madhavendra Puri, and I've taken some notes, and this morning I actually read this whole chapter, chapter 4 in the Majalila Prabhupada's Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishna's Kaviraj's Chaitanya Charitamrita, and Prabhupada's translation. So Prabhupada comments, and we're going to be reading from the notes and also commenting also on Madhavendra Puri. He's such an important personality. Prabhupada comments, and also Lord Chaitanya says that Madhavendra Puri was the source of devotional love. You know, ecstatic devotional love based on the conjugal attraction of the gopis with Krishna. Before that, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, no one really manifested it. I'm sure people had it. I mean, like, obviously the gopis had it. And obviously Vyasadeva understood it like that. But still, to make it public for everyone, that was not there. And you see it in, because we're going to not do this in chronologically, you see in Madhavendra Puri's passing away from this world, he was manifesting these symptoms of divine vipralamba seva, that is just like separation from the Lord. He was crying out, oh my Lord, I have not reached Mathura, Vrindavan, I have not reached Mathura. And one of his disciples, this is a side story, named Ramchandrapuri. It turns out that his disciples generally had the Puri name Ramchandrapuri, Ishwarapuri, like that. So one of his disciples, Ramchandrapuri, had the audacity to preach to his guru. Of course, this disciple was realized in Brahman, not in Krishna consciousness. Somehow or other, he had not heard his guru's instructions properly. And he told his guru, that is Madhavendra Puri, why are you lamenting? Just meditate on Brahman. And even started to preach from Bhagavad Gita and said, Brahma Bhuta Prasanatman Sachati Nakakshati Samaksarve Shubhute Shuma. Just meditate on Brahman. You know, why are you lamenting? This is Maya. Basically, he was saying it's Maya. And Madhavendra Puri, showing transcendental anger, said, I have not reached matura, but this fool has come to harass me. So get out of here, you rascal. I don't want to ever see your face again in this lifetime. And so that's a nice thing to remember, your last words your guru to. Get out of here. I don't want to see your face anymore. So a good remembrance, you know, to put in a biography. So Ramchandra Puri, at that point, he just lost all of his inclination towards devotional service. And the weed of Vaishnava aparadha, or criticism of Vaishnavas, became more and more manifest, fructified in his heart. So even when he met Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, this is also in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, he criticized Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for eating sweets because there were some ants crawling on Lord Chaitanya's floor, the Gambhir where he stayed. And he criticized Lord Chaitanya for eating too much. And then he criticized Lord Chaitanya for eating too little when Lord Chaitanya reduced his eating. But Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, observing Vaishnava etiquette, because Ramchandra Puri was the godbrother of his spiritual master, and that's really important etiquette to observe, Lord Chaitanya never criticized Ramchandra Puri. He just like tolerated and reduced his eating, and eventually when Ramchandra Puri went away, he a normal amount again. So that's a really interesting story involving Madhavendra Puri about separation and also the danger of offending a Vaishnava, how one loses one's ability to understand, one's attachment for chanting the holy name becomes second class, third class, or non-existent when one offends a Vaishnava. So the secret of Krishna consciousness is serving Vaishnavas. So anyway, so Madhavendra Puri was in the Paramahamsa stage of sannyas. There's different stages of sannyas. The first stage of sannyas, actually we're talking about this in your audience too. The first stage of sannyas is when you actually just live in the same village and your wife sends you food through your sons. Now she doesn't come and deliver it. Something like Pizza Hut or something. So you're not really. So your wife sends you food through your sons because you can't really figure out how to cook for yourself. It's interesting, you know, sometimes people are in such protected situations that they don't learn how to cook. I was talking to one older devotee the other day. Hopefully he's not getting angry at me. So I was talking to one older devotee of an eternal. Sound here, so I don't hear. So, and he was getting ready to take sannyas, and I said to him, "So, do you know how to cook?" He said, "No, it's just nice. I just stay at the temples and they feed me." And I said, "How are you going to preach?" Because Prabhupada said our Krishna consciousness is kitchen religion. You see, if Prabhupada came to America, if he came to America and didn't cook, what would have happened? You know, the people would have come, heard philosophy, and you get attracted to the holy name. But, you know, how could they give up eating meat unless Prabhupada had cooked? So Prabhupada also said at another time that only a lazy man can't cook. So I don't know who that applies to. But, and Prabhupada said that he learned to cook from watching his mother. So even though, Prabhupada was previously in household life, he actually was an expert, as it's called, basically a rasacharya. Rasacharya referring to the taste of food, not only to the rasas of devotional service. So cooking is a very important part of devotional service. So anyway, so getting back to the sannyas life. So the first division of sannyas is by Kutichak, where one remains in the same village, gets his food. Then after that, there's Madhukari, where really one of the main things you do as a sannyasi is going door to door and begging for one japati from each house. I mean, it's not wrong to do Madhukari, but it's really, it becomes an important part of your life to maintain yourself. And then after that, there's Parvajakacharya. And as a Parvajakacharya, you preach and you don't make so much endeavor for food, but still, you can ask people for food. It's all right. There's no problem with that. But then in Paramahamsa stage, you just depend, you don't ask anybody for food. You just depend on Krishna. And if Krishna doesn't supply anything, you don't eat. That's something like the training that a brahmachari is supposed to get, as Prabhupada said. Unless the spiritual master calls him or her to eat, then the brahmachari doesn't eat. There's stories about that in the Mahabharata, but I can tell those stories. So that's the training. Brahmacharya Gurukule Vasandanta Gurorita. One learns to control his senses, to be equal poised, samadhanatta paksha chanti rajakam. So anyway, so Madhavendra Puri was in that highest stage of sannyas. He never asked anybody. He just walked around, chanting the holy names, absorbed internally Paramahamsa. Now generally also Paramahamsa doesn't preach. Paramahamsa comes down to a certain platform when it's time to preach. He's still Paramahamsa, but he acts as Majjhima Adhikari in order to fulfill duties that Krishna wants him to do. And so Madhavendra Puri was actually like that too. So he was traveling all over Western India, and in Western India, this is before he gets to Vrindavan, he met Nitai, Lord Nityananda. And when he met Lord Nityananda, first thing they did is they both fainted, embraced each other for hours, rolling on the ground, and all of Madhavendra Puri's disciples could not understand why he was embracing this other sannyasi and crying. And everybody was amazed. And of course, they spent some time together, and Lord Nityananda took initiation from Madhavendra Puri. So we have Lord Nityananda, and later on we'll hear about Dvaitacharya, also took initiation from Madhavendra Puri. So see, Madhavendra Puri is so important. He's the grand spiritual master of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, spiritual master of Lord Nityananda, spiritual master of Dvaitacharya. It's amazing. It's connection with our whole parampara. So the story of Madhavendra Puri in the Chaitanya Charitamrita is actually Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu speaking what he heard from his spiritual master, Ishwara Puri. So it's a conversation. The Lord Chaitanya is actually, well, Lord Chaitanya is in this temple called Shirachura Gopinath. And the Shirachura Gopinath temple is in a place called Remuna, which is sort of not halfway between Calcutta and Jagannath Puri, but it's like three quarters of the way to Jagannath Puri from Calcutta. Quarters, or maybe even a little bit more. I don't know. Has anyone here been to Ramona? Yeah, we got one devotee been to Ramona. Two devotees. I've been several times to Ramona. Beautiful temple. And of course, the deity is Gopinath, and we'll explain why the deity is called Shirachara Gopinath as this story goes on. Shirachara Gopinath means the deity who stole Shira, or sweet rice. And generally in India, if any of you know Hindi, it's also chora is an insult. We had like where I preach is Fiji a lot. And in Fiji, you find the devotees insulting each other, very politically. They go, "Chora!" And one day, someone wrote a big note on the side of a building, "So-and-so is a chora. He's a thief." Because the person was in charge of the temple and they were thinking he was stealing. He wasn't. He wasn't actually stealing. Nowadays, of course, we're more civilized. We just go on the internet and do that. So, I don't know if it's more civilized. So, anyway, so this whole story about Madhavendra Puri was spoken by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to the devotees as Lord Chaitanya was in this temple of Shirachara Gopinath, which is in Ramona. Ramona is sort of an isolated place. We stayed overnight there. There's no, it's actually, there's a dharamshala, but it's filled with rats. I mean, big ones. They're the size of the boars here. And they just, they crawl at you at night. But that was a good austerity. And we woke up, we had mandala arati for the deities there, for Chirachara Gopinath. It's really amazing things that we experienced by Lord Chaitanya's mercy. So anyway, Lord Chaitanya told the story. He told the story. Here's the scenario in which he told the story, because when Lord Chaitanya reached Ramuna and took darshan of Shirachara Gopinath, a flower crown fell on Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's head. And he offered obeisances, and then the flower crown from Shirachara Gopinath fell on Lord Chaitanya's head. Amazing. Signifying that he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the Shirachara Gopinath, oh yeah, I gotta tell more stories about Shirachara Gopinath. Shirachara Gopinath is a relief deity. He's not like a freestanding deity like we have here. So like a bas relief. I'm sure some of you know what that is. So the story of how that deity was made is quite amazing. We have many, many eons ago, Lord Ramchandra and Sita Devi were in that area. And Sita Devi asked Lord Ramchandra, "What do you look like in the Dwapara Yuga?" Because Lord Ramchandra manifested his pastimes in the Treta Yuga. And Lord Ramchandra, without saying anything, took out his arrow and he carved this deity. And it's a really amazing deity. And also, I got to tell more because I'm remembering more details about the deity. So also, because there's so much condensed milk offered to the deities, which is definitely like nectar. I took a lot of it when I was young. And gave up my veganness. So they actually have the cow shed as part of the altar there. It's right behind, I mean, not that the deities can walk into the deity room. Not that the cows can walk into the deity room, but there's just a concrete wall separating them. And so you see the deities, then you go to the back and you see actually the cows right behind the deities. And also there's the samadhi very close of Madhavendra Puri. Well, you have to walk a little distance. It's about a 5-minute walk from the temple. And the samadhi of Rakshikananda there, Shyamananda. So it's a really important holy place for the Gaudiya Vaishnavas. Really, really important holy place. And you have to go there. I mean, it's hard. Nowadays, you really need to rent a car or something to go there. I mean, we rented a bus. When we did our South India tour, we actually went all the way from Mayapur, all the way around India. And we rented a bus in Mayapur. And with 30 devotees, 30 some odd devotees, we did it several times. And we went, stopped and slept in the bus and everything, and camped out. It was one of the most exciting experiences I've had. And we trace the footsteps of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In other words, we visited the same place where Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu visited. In Ramuna, you actually see, as in all the other places where Lord Chaitanya visited, You see the footprints of Lord Chaitanya that were installed by Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He established what's called the Padatirthas all over. And, in Andhra Pradesh, you have all these Nrisinga temples, like Wahovalam and Mangalgiri, Singhachalam, and that's where Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu stayed too. So it's an amazing experience. I mean, a devotee should do that while they're still young or still old. They should try to visit these places. So anyway, so Lord Chaitanya told the story. So here's the story he told. Madhavendra Puri went to Vrindavan in his travels, and he came to Govardhan. The first thing he did, he circumambulated Govardhan Hill. And at that time, Govardhan was like a real jungle. Actually, in India, they call jungles jungle. Jungle. I guess that's where the word came from in English. Jungle. I remember sometimes you'll get people from India coming out here and they'll say, "Oh, this is jungle." Have that happen here? The jungle. It's not really jungle, but. But at that time, Vrindavan was like a jungle. There were tigers. There were tigers freely roaming around. For example, when Raghunath Das Goswami was chanting on the banks of the Shyamakunda and Radhakund, tigers would come up. And Krishna himself stood guard to protect Raghunath Das Goswami from the tigers. Sanatana Goswami saw that, and he ordered Raghunath Das Goswami, "You've got to make a kutir." And then Radharani was also protecting Raghunath Das Goswami from the sun with her shawl. So that's why Raghunath Das Goswami made a kutir, otherwise he wouldn't have made a kutir, bhajan kutir. So anyway, it was a jungle. This is part important part of the story to understand this. So he circumambulated Govardhan Hill, and in the jungle there's all these animals, but a sannyasi. It's another point about a sannyasi, he's not supposed to be afraid. In the Bhagavad Gita it says, Abhaya Shatlasham Shuddhi Jnana Yoga Vapastitihi. First quality is Abhaya. Abhaya, like Prabhupada's name, Abhaya Charanamabinda. Freedom from fear, because Shatlasham Shuddhi, he's established in transcendental knowledge. Jnana Yoga Vyastatiti. He's connected with yoga, connected with the knowledge of yoga. Yoga, that means to connect with Krishna. Raghunath Das Goswami. Raghunath Das Goswami resided on the banks of the Shyamakund in a place called the Manasapavana Ghat. Shyamakund. Anyways. More stories about that, but it'll get too long if I start telling those stories. So he circumambulated, took his bath in Govindakund, the famous Govindakund, and a boy came, a young boy, attractive. You probably guess who he was. And the boy said, "Who are you?" And he said, "Madhavendra Puri." And "What are you eating?" And the boy said, "No one fasts in our village." And he brought him some milk, condensed milk, something like that. And then the boy left, and Madhavendra Puri, the boy said, "I'll come back later and get this pot." But he didn't come back later to get the pot in which the condensed milk was. So Madhavendra Puri took some rest after that, and in a dream, the boy came to him again and said that I have been hidden in the bushes here, the jungle basically, because the Muslims came and the priest who was taking care of me was very frightened and he put me in the bushes and he ran away. And he was also frightened about being killed by the Muslims. And this was a bona fide fear because in many places, the invaders, these were Mughals, a particular division of the Muslims. Not all Muslims like that. I don't want to instill anger towards Muslims. These are Mughals, particularly rough and tough, Genghis Khan type of people. They actually came from where Genghis Khan came from, the Mughals. And they actually ruined, to a certain extent, the Islamic religion. In many ways, they ruined it. They turned it into a very violent religion. So, but not everybody's like that. Okay, so then they used to take sometimes the deities from the temples and ground them up and put them in the road so people could step on them. Hellish. So, and in many temples, they immerse the deities, the devotees put the deities into the lakes to protect the deities. Radhakunda was like that too. The original deities in Radhakunda, Mandir called the Radhakund Puran Mandir. They were discovered by Raghunath Das Goswami as they were excavating Radhakund. These are beautiful deities that are right by the marketplace. You're all invited to come with me sometime. Right by the marketplace in Radhakund, and they're worshipped today. They're called the Puran deities. That's the name. Puran means old, original deities there. So anyway, so Krishna came in the dream to Madhavendra Puri and said, I've been hidden in the bushes. And you should come excavate, take me out and put me on top of Govardhan Hill and serve me. Make a temple and serve me. So in the dream, he took Madhavendra Puri by the hand to the specific bush where he was. Amazing dream. I mean, just like, wow. And he instructed him to construct the temple. And he said, my name is Gopal. And he said, I've been installed by Brajanaba. Now, Brajanaba is the great grandson of Krishna, Aniruddha's son. And Brajanaba was the one who went to Vrindavan after Krishna left and Dwarka was destroyed. He went to Vrindavan with many of Krishna's associates that were still on the planet and established the holy places there and also installed the deities, the original deities that like Radha Govinda and other deities, the original deities that were discovered by the Goswamis of Vrindavan. And so like Radha Madan Mohan, Radha Govinda, like that. And many of these deities were buried, like Radha Govinda was buried in the ground too. There's a whole story about that. A cow was giving milk to Govindaji who was in the ground. And then Rupa Goswami arranged for the excavation and the deity was taken out. Anyway, so Brajanava was a very, is a very important person. And the deities, many of the deities that were installed by Brajanava were made of this stone called Vajra, which is very hard black stone. If anyone's been, some of the deities were actually metal. But if anyone's been to in the Sringa temple of the tail of Govardhan, anyone been there? There's a deity made like the one of the original deities there. The original deities were generally taken out of India, not out of India, sorry, out of Vrindavan, and they were taken to places like Jaipur, Udaipur, especially Rajasthan. Because in Rajasthan, the Mughals weren't able to enter because the Rajputs were so strong that nobody could defeat them. And they were the strongest, them and the Gurkhas from Nepal are actually the strongest fighters that exist. I mean, they would die. They do die rather than lose a battle. So anyway, so getting back to Gopal, so Madhavendra Puri woke up or came back to external consciousness, went to the village, gathered people to take Gopal out, and they saw Gopal was so big, and they brought him to the top of the hill and made a temporary throne, like with some stones, like Govardhan Shilas, and he sat on the top of Govardhan Hill. So someone may question, how can they walk on Govardhan Hill? Because we're not supposed to walk on Govardhan Hill. Well, these are specific, special devotees and pastimes. Krishna also walked on Govardhan Hill. But we are advised by our acharyas never to walk on Govardhan Hill. In fact, Rupa and Sanatana Goswami and the other Goswamis, and even Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, would not climb Govardhan Hill to see Gopal. So Gopal, later on, this is of course later on after Madhavendra Puri disappeared. So Gopal had to make some tricks so that they could see him. And those tricks were that there was some rumor the Muslims were coming. So they took Gopal down. And then eventually took him to Mathura and other places, and Lord Chaitanya and his devotees were able to see Gopal. So, but he was originally installed on Govardhan Hill. Later on, he was transported to Nathdwar, and it's called Sri Nathji. And he's worshipped generally by the Gujaratis. And he's worshipped, Prabhupada said the specific worship of Gopal is different than the worship of most of the deities we have in the temple. He's worshipped as a very young boy. And in some aspects of the worship, they actually put toys on the altar for him, like toy trains and toys like that. It's you know, little, whatever, you know, little instruments and things like that. So it's a very special type of worship that's not done, I think, with practically any other deity. So, anyway, so in order to install Gopal, they took water from Govinda Kund, 900 pots. They had this big Abhishek ceremony. And not only the water, the what's called Panchagavya, the five products of the cow, Panchamrita, you know, that's like very sweet stuff like honey and milk, and sugar and stuff like that. They bathed him like that, offered food to him. And Madhavendra Puri initiated all the Brahmins in the area so that they would be able to continue to worship Govardhan. So this ceremony of Abhishek and installation went on for many, many days. Actually, different villages would come to do the ceremony and bring in everything. And people, rich men from Mathura would come and bring jewels and gold and everything for worshiping gold. Gopal. So this went on for about 2 years. And after 2 years of regular worship, Madhavendra Puri had a dream. And in that dream, Gopal said to him that I am, whoops, there you go. He said, I'm still hot. You know, I've been in the bushes all these years. You know, I know you've given me a bath with the Govinda good water and all the water, but I need some sandalwood here. So you better go get me some sandalwood. So Madhavendra Puri heads to get sandalwood. And sandalwood is a very rare, expensive commodity. Of course, much more rare today. They've actually cut down most of the sandalwood trees around the world. It's extremely expensive. But even then in India, it was extremely and controlled. You couldn't really transport it from one place to another, especially from Orissa to any other state in India. This is where Jagannath Puri is. So Madhavendra Puri, he thought, now I should go to Jagannath Puri because that's where they have sandalwood. And the actual sandalwood comes from the Malaya provinces, brought to Jagannath Puri. Some was grown actually in Orissa too. So on the way to Jagannath Puri, he passed through Bengal, and there he initiated Advaita Acharya. And then he arrived in Ramuna, where Shirachara Gopinath was. We described who Shirachara Gopinath was. And he started to dance and chant and roll on the ground in ecstasy before the deities. And he wanted to find out what they offered to Shirachara Gopinath, because he, not for his own sake, because remember, he had taken a vow never to ask for food, but he wanted to find out so that he could offer the same food to Gopal. And so he inquired from the priests and the cooks, what do you offer? And the priests told him several preparations. Actually, it's not that they only make sheer in the deities, but he said this special Gopinath sheer is unlike anything else in the three worlds. And nobody else makes it. And he's thinking, if I can taste some of that, I can make it for my deities. But he became so embarrassed because that's when the offering was going on. And really, you're not supposed to think of eating before the offering or even during the offering. It's like sometimes kids are at home and they say to their parents, "Is it prasadam yet?" You know, but that's children, that's fine. But we shouldn't be thinking like that, you know, thinking every time that you hear the bell ring, it just means come and get it for us. So he was told about a particular condensed milk called Amrita Keli, and they offered 12 pots. And he wanted to taste it, but then he became so embarrassed at thinking that he wanted to eat prasadam or eat the offering before it was offered. He just left the place, went to the market, took some rest there. In the meantime, the priest of the temple, this is the middle of the night, after he put the deities to sleep, the priest had a dream, and in the dream, Gopinath came to him, and he said, I've stolen some sweet rice, and I've hid it under my cloth. So you should wake up and take it out and take it to Madhavendra Puri, who's in the marketplace. And then the priest, I mean, he couldn't believe his dream, but he woke up and he took a bath, obviously. Went into there, found the sweet rice, you know, little pot. These are little pots. You know, when you're talking, sometimes in the CC, you see these giant pots of sweet rice and everything like that. Well, the pots that were offered in there are about this small. You know, they're little clay pots. And there's 12 of them offered in each offering. So they're not like giant pots that would fulfill the dreams of any ISKCON devotee. You know, it's basically that. But if you take one, it's a whole meal. When I took one, I didn't want to eat the rest of the prasadam. I just was full. Because it is so nectarian, that particular sweet rice offered to Gopinath. You have to, everyone should take at least once in a lifetime. So anyway, getting back to the story. So the priest did this, went to the market, and announced, "Is there a sannyasi here named Madhavendra Puri? Gopinath has stolen sweet rice for you." And Madhavendra Puri got up, obviously, and took the sweet rice, washed the pot, and for the rest of his stay in this mortal world, he kept the pot and ate little pieces of the pot each day. Amazing story. It's a long story. Then he left Ramuna, where Churachura Gopinath was, for Jagannath Puri, collected the camphor and sandalwood, and he got two servants, and all the paperwork from the government so they could pass through the different barriers. And it's a lot, very heavy, the sandalwood he was carrying. And on the way back to Vrindavan for Gopal, he reached Ramuna again, where Churachura Gopinath was. And that's why he's called Churachura Gopinath. He stole the sweet rice from Madhavendra Puri. And then he had another dream. And this is another point. We shouldn't consider our dreams so significant. You know, sometimes we hear about these dreams of these great devotees. Their dreams are significant, but, you know, if I was to follow every dream I had, you know, I don't know what would happen to me. So these are great Nityasiddha devotees. So in this dream, Gopal talked to him. That means Gopal in Vrindavan and Govardhan. And said, "I've already accepted this sandalwood, no use taking it all the way across India," because, you know, all the way from Ramuna, all the way to Vrindavan, that's a long trip. And he said, "Just use it on Gopinath, and then I'll be satisfied." So he saved Madhavendra Puri trouble, because the Muslims were there, and there was so much traveling there. And that was the actual end of the story about Madhavendra Puri. Madhavendra Puri never begged anything to eat. And there's a verse that Madhavendra Puri chanted when he was leaving this world. And I'll just read the English. Somehow the Sanskrit diacritics didn't properly go. It looks like Chinese characters here. Adhya Dayana Daridra, something. Hey. Tura kayada se loka avaloka se yavara loka karadita brayate kila uromyaha. O my Lord, O my most merciful Master, O Master of Mathura, when shall I see you again? Because of my not seeing you, my agitated heart has become unsteady. O most beloved one, what shall I do now? So this is the mood of the gopis. So Krishna is being referred to here as the Master of Mathura because he's left Vrindavan and gone to Mathura, and the gopis want to bring him back. When shall I see you again? And so Madhavendra Puri is showing to the highest degree this Vipralamba Sega, which was later manifest completely and elaborated on by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's followers. So that's why he was considered by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu the source of ecstatic love in our Sampradaya. So, any questions or comments? Yes. Yeah. I know things outside of our control are Krishna's arrangement. I'll tell you a story that once upon a time, well, see, this happened several times, devotees got in car accidents and some people died. And Prabhupada was told, a devotee mentioned Krishna's mercy. And Prabhupada said, no, it's not Krishna, it's their foolishness. So we are actually responsible for our actions. And also by the influence of the Krishna consciousness movement, major disasters like the atomic war that you mentioned could be avoided. But if something's outside of our control, as it's stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Yo Mam Pashyati Sarvatra, Sarvam Chamai Pashyati Tashyaham Napanashami, Sachami Napanashati. If one sees Krishna in everything and everything in Krishna, he's never lost to Krishna, and Krishna's never lost to him. So, ultimately, things that we have no control of, yes, you know, that's Krishna's arrangement. But if you have some control over something, like if I do something foolish, like I saw the water there, whoops, oh my God, and put this electrical thing on top of the water, there were sparks everywhere. It almost got down there. So I can't say, hey, Krishna's arranged that. Look, so interesting. No, it's my foolishness. Or let's say the water comes in through the back door there and nobody's done anything about it for the last 200 years. It's not Krishna's arrangement that the floor is flooded. You know, because we have some ability. Krishna says, you know, there's five factors of action in the Bhagavad Gita. And the super soul or Krishna is only one of those factors. So we have some control. However, if it's something outside of our control, then we just see, you know, Krishna's arrangement, make the best out of it. As they say, when life gives you a lemon, you make lemonade out of it. And you take advantage of the situation. I mean, certainly when the Kauravas tried to disrobe Draupadi, of course, they were at fault. You can't just blame Krishna. But Krishna had arranged that whole scenario, too. You know, that doesn't absolve us, even though Even though a particular scenario occurs, it doesn't absolve us from personal responsibility. So it's a fine point there. A fine point. But if we do find everybody destroying each other, then we chant Hare Krishna and go back to Godhead. Prabhupada was asked one time, well, several times about the war. I mean, devotees really like to talk about the war. World War III. It's one of the favorite topics. Was one of, maybe still is. I don't know. But Prabhupada would say, devotees said, when the bombs fall, it'll contaminate everything. We won't be able to eat anything. And Prabhupada just said nonchalantly, and we will die. And the devotees get nervous, and Prabhupada says something like, only a fool says that when death comes, complains about it. Death is natural. Leaving the body is natural. We've done it so many times, we should get used to it. But of course, the most painful part of death is actually leaving behind people you love. That's actually the most painful part. But just death is wherever there is death, birth is certain. Wherever there is birth, death is certain. And of course, this isn't the Gita, so we should not avoid our duties, Krishna consciousness. I mean, I don't want to be depressing about death. It's just part of life. Birth, part of life. People are born, part of life. People die, it's part of life. People get old, it's part of life. People get sick, it's part of life. People, yes. Yeah. Prepare to chant Hare Krishna. I remember, what was it? The Y2K phenomena. Some of you are not that old that you remember that. But I was that old. And everyone was predicting that, the computers would lose all the bank information and society would fall apart. There'd be big riots and everything like that. Even some of our GBC were predicting that at that particular time. And people were stockpiling food. And even some devotees bought farms, not this farm, of course, bought farms with the idea they wouldn't have to pay the mortgage. Under the Y2K. And then, I was waiting, Y2K, Y2K, Y2K. And I might have been in Fiji or something like that, because that's where the year 2000 hits first. That's right on the date line. And nothing happened. It was a non-event. So I'm not saying that there won't be a war. I mean, that's life. Prabhupada said there will be war. If they have weapons, they're going to use them. The Prabhupada said that. But how do we prepare? Take precaution, yes. Maybe have some food stockpiled. But at the same time, I don't think we should all have, like, guns to drive off the hordes from the cities, as people are advocating. If people come from the cities and they're hungry, I'll feed them my own food. I'm not going to start killing people who are hungry. I mean, that's a, sometimes people have that conception they want to stockpile weapons because people are going to come hungry. Well, feed them. Feed them. And if you're not going to die from starvation. Prabhupada said it takes a long time to die from starvation. Probably get healthier if we lose some weight. And then learn how to forage. I mean, there's food available. Krishna's taking care of everybody. I have, devotees should never get into this violence thing, thinking we have to protect ourselves from, whatever. I mean, I'm not killing anybody. I'd leave my own life before I kill someone. I mean, out of defense, I might do it. But, I'm not gonna kill someone because they want my food. Think about it. Is that a Vaishnava? To eat the cows? Yeah, they won't protect the cows. But if people want food, my food, I'm stockpiling food and hiding in the ground, getting a backhoe, just squirreling everything away. It's like squirrels. I mean, where I live, we have squirrels. You have squirrels here? And during the fall, they're all like opening up the nuts and throwing them in my house. The shells out here. Of course, they don't do it at night, which is kind of nice. They only do it during the day. So, yeah, I mean, obviously, we should take some precaution, but we don't want to kill people. I don't think we want to kill people. You can use, maybe keep them off from hurting the cows, yeah. But, if you start shooting people, it's going to become a big mess. If you think about the scenario, then you get more people and more people and more people, and you'll have basic riots and they'll kill you. So not only will the cows be killed, but you'll be killed too. So you have to examine the proper scenarios. There's no way you're going to hold off people. I know here in the South, you all love guns. Just like your, love affair. I mean, it's not that I'm an innocent young boy, an innocent person either. I mean, when I was young, I had 10 guns. So I'm not just like talking at the top of my head. And we had guns like you couldn't even buy today. We had elephant guns. Elephant gun is like 70 caliber. And I shot them. So I'm not just like some city guy who was just like, innocent, thinking goody goody two shoes. But I know what a gun can do. And I also like people. And people come, I will get them to chant. I will give them my food. And if I starve, that's life. Yeah. You can hide the cows because you can't bury them. But I mean, you can figure out how to with the cows, and then. But people should be ready to give their own. I mean, look at the stories we have of. Sorry, Runty Dave, isn't it? Stories like that where the king is willing. What was that other story about the food? Runty Dave was there. Gave parts of his flesh, but what was the other king? Gave all of his food? Huh? No. No, he gave all of his food to Brahmins and beggars and dogs and everything like that. Was that Runty Dave? Anyway, I thought Runty Dave was the one who gave his flesh. Runty Dave was the flesh. There was another king. Yeah, Runty Dave was offering his flesh to the hawk who was chasing the bird. Pigeon, yeah. No, it wasn't Harishchandra. There's another story. This is from the Bhagavatam too. Anyway, I forget. It doesn't matter the name. But that was his attitude. He had done a fast for like 40 something days, this king. And he got ready to eat some ghee and everything, like not ghee, but food cooking ghee. And then he gave part away to a Brahmin, then eventually, I don't remember all the details, part to a Shudra, then a man with dogs, and even gave the water away. I mean, these are our exemplars, isn't it? And then he got ready to die. He didn't die because he was tested by all, these were demigods who tested him. Same thing as Runty Dave, he was tested by the hawk, who was, I think it was Agni. It was Agni and Indra, if I remember correctly. He was tested by the hawk. He was tearing off pieces of his flesh, and eventually was going to give his whole body to protect the pigeon. And that's Vaishnava, as far as I'm concerned. Yeah. Yeah, they were in New Orleans. They were somewhere else in the country. Yeah, I would say there's ways to deal with them. You know, with deer, you have fences and, you know. Deer or raccoons, and they even have blindfolds on their faces so you can't recognize who it is. All right, anyway, so that's just my humble opinion. I do not want to hurt anybody, and I'm willing to give my own food for that. Don't test me. All right, one more question. Is there what? I don't remember reading about who Madhavendra Puri was in the spiritual world. I mean, in Vrindavan past tense. Okay, thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Madhavendra Puri ki jai.